We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. This is the TRANSCOM meeting held on Thursday, August 18, 2016 at 2:00 at the Los Angeles Regional Council Office, 295 North Jimmy Doolittle Road, Salt Lake City. I'm going to start off with introductions. So we'll just kind of start maybe right back there in the back. And we'll jump up to this table. So go ahead.
Ted Knowlton with WFRC.
Please step forward with Council Staff.
James Ebert, the most hated man in Weber County, according to Mayor Searle.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Mitch Adams, Clinton City Mayor.
Regional Council Staff.
McCullough Cullimore, Cotton Heights.
Shane Marshall, no relation to this fine young man next to me.
You want to make sure very clear, right?
Brent Marshall, and I told some of his cohorts that that's my brother.
I thought you were Uncle Brent.
That's why I said no relation.
Now I've gone to UDOT Commissioner.
Mass Civil UTA.
Okay.
Over
here. Eric Rasband, Utah Department of Transportation.
Julia Collins, WFRC staff. Muriel Sessional, WFRC staff.
Willie Johnson, Brave Utah.
Jory Dowery, Truck Council staff.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, first action is we need to approve the minutes of the June 16, 2016 meeting. We've had a copy of those reviewed. Anybody find any additions or corrections to those minutes?
Mr. Chair.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Brent and a second by
Mayor Coleman.
And any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Next time we have an opportunity for public comment. At times, this Transportation Committee needs a little extra guidance from members of the public or any other group that wants to comment. So if you have comments for us that you'd like us to consider, we'll give you 3 minutes. Come on up, state your name for the record, and we'll listen to what you have to say. We don't see any public comment, so we'll go ahead and move ahead to the next one here. Transportation Improvement, the TIP. And I believe Ben is going to talk to us about this. Ben, you want to talk about this, board modifications to the 2016-2021 TIP?
Yep, sorry. Just in case you wanted to snooze a little. Since our last meeting, the WFRC has received a request to modify the 2016-2021 Transportation Improvement Program. As many of you are well aware, that the Transportation Improvement Program is a 6-year program of highway and transit projects for the Salt Lake, West Valley, and the Ogden-Layton urban areas, and it's approved annually, but it's modified almost monthly due to the dynamic nature of the transportation projects and the funding. These projects are identified in the packet. They're attached to the resolution on the list. The first list will look a lot like this. It identifies two projects on the in the modification. The first project is, I want to highlight this area first. So this is the Ogden-Layton urban area. You go all the way on the north end, Brigham City, down here to the south end of North Salt Lake. So quite a large geographical area. That's the Ogden-Layton urban area. And this particular project is right here in Woods Cross. It's on 1500 South from 1350 West to 11th West. It's a reconstruction project with some minor widening. That would ensue the improvements to the cross streets to tie into the intersection. It'll widen this facility from a narrow two-lane facility with some curb and gutter and ditch. It'll make it uniform with shoulder, curb, gutter, and sidewalk. Also, in addition with this project, there's some funds that have been identified that are on the rail crossing on 1500 South. The idea or the request for this board modification is to increase the lengths on the side streets to tie in to the existing storm drain, and then also to add the funds that have been identified for the pedestrian crossing on the railroad structure. So if we were to look, here's looking east and west on the facility. West is the top, that's what it'll look like. Going east, east is on the bottom. Here we are looking north and south and in the railroad crossing. Project estimated cost a little more than $3 million. We currently have $2.7 plus million programmed in federal funds. The other amounts of funds are local funds, and the request is to expand the scope of this project, not to add additional funds. If there are needs for additional funds, the sponsor has committed to make that, but that would be the first modification. The second modification is in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, and this particular project drops right about there on the 5300 South and Commerce Drive. This particular intersection, located right here, is a very congested intersection, and the idea is to utilize the capacity of the pavement and construct an additional through lane through the intersection to tie into the double or the dual left turn lane so that it minimizes weaving that takes place from the three through currently to the two left turn or the dual left turn. And what it would do is that then it would meet the, well, by moving this bay back, the left turn bay on the Commerce Drive, they would be able to utilize that pavement and make this project happen. The request is for an additional, or is for $600,000. This is a new project. And then the next list, this brings us the next two lists, a recreational trails program. Well, I'm just so nervous. I think it's for my next part of this. But so the reconstruction project has actually two parts to it. There's the non-motorized, and that's the first list, and there's three projects there. And then there's the motorized section, and there's five projects there. Now, the recreational trails program was authorized by Congress as part of the Intermodal Surface Transportation Equity Act back in 1991. That was safety. This program has been continued throughout upgrades, the transportation laws, up to Fast Act. But what this will do is it'll include all trail facilities, both motorized and non-motorized, for bike, ped, equestrian, and other uses. It's administered by the Utah State Parks. It's for motorized and non-motorized facilities. It can be combined with other funds. And a revenue is generated from the federal motor fuel tax, and it's apportioned to each state. And the state of Utah got about just under $1.5 million. There's 40 projects that were programmed, and then there were 8 projects that were programmed for the Wasatch Front area. So this last slide here, I just, you know, invite you to come out and participate in active transportation. But that would be all that we have for the board modification.
I have a question.
Please.
How did you get a canal company to allow you to construct a trail? We've got canals everywhere, but they're very difficult to develop because they have big gates, and if anybody falls in, they won't accept liability and all that kind of stuff. You know the problem. How do you go about getting a canal company to be part of the discussion?
I guess it would depend on the canal company. There's quite a few that are happening in various locations along the canal. Some are even box culverting the canal, but I don't know if anyone else would have any suggestions or discussions. Jory?
I'd say some of the, I mean, just working with the canal companies, I know South Jordan's worked on the Wilmy Jacob Canal, and they're working, they've got a plan to do the whole canal through South Jordan. But up in Clearfield, they developed a canal, a trail along the canal, and then it connects into Layton City, and Layton City couldn't get the canal company to work with them, and so it literally, the trail stopped right on the border of the two cities. And so it's kind of hit and miss, but a handful of years ago, there was some legislation that was passed that released liability on the canal company for anything that happened. And so I think it's just going to take a little time to continue to work with them. But
has that been tested in court yet?
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
But
thank you.
Okay, so that's it, right, Ben?
Then,
any other questions for this? This is going to be a resolution that recommends that it's a recommendation from Transcom that the Wasatch Front Regional Council make these changes to this TIP program. So, with that, is there a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
I didn't see who that was. Did you get it? Okay. Mayor Freeman, and the second was
myself.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
And
I have one question for Ben. Ben, on that motorized one, that middle one there, that's a total project value of $500,000. It says a 10-foot wide asphalt paved right away, but doesn't say how long that is. What is that? 20 miles long?
I do not know on some of those specifics.
That's a lot of money for a trail. It must be a long one.
The amount that's being, I don't know, Commissioner.
Okay.
I can find that out for you.
Okay.
Well, I would say make sure you have that ready for the Wasatch Front Regional Council meeting.
700 West and 66.
10 blocks.
Wow.
Not very far.
Can you speak up?
It says 5700 west, about 6600 west, so it's not very far, but 10 foot wide and 4 feet thick, that's a lot of asphalt. A mile long.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Did you say 4 feet thick?
Four inches.
Oh, 4 inches, okay. All right, we got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? And just think be roll call. Or we never do roll call here, do we?
No.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Group standing. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, Ben, you want to move on to 3B? This is the transportation improvement project. Let's see what the highlights here. You got the highlights. Go.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you. So the Wasatch Front Regional Council is responsible for developing a transportation improvement program. So for your review and the recommendation of the Regional Council for approval, may I present the 2017-2022 Transportation Improvement Program with air quality conformity finding. Not only modeling our TIP logo to reflect our efforts along the Wasatch Front, but to reflect on the unique period of the time. We worked with the Utah Department of Transportation, the Utah Transit Authority, and the cities and the communities in the region to compile the list of projects, the proposed projects that are included in the draft 2017-2022 TIP. That list is included in your packet. In your packet, you have a copy of the tables that represents the draft transportation improvement program. As you're aware, the transportation improvement program is a 6-year program of highway and transit projects for the Salt Lake West Valley and the Ogden Layton urban areas. It's a compilation of projects from various federal, state, and local funding. And it's those projects that will implement the long-range plan, the highway transit plans for the region, and provide for the maintenance of the existing transportation system. These projects will improve will have include improvements, including everything from the new construction of a superhighway like the Mountain View Corridor to the bike path trail improvements on the Immigrant Trail in the West Davis and Weber counties. Projects in the TIP represent millions of dollars, $4.3 billion to be exact, and with thousands of jobs, economic growth, mobility, and access, as well as the preservation of life and promote the quality of life here in the Wasatch Front area. The TIP must also be financially constrained, conform to air quality, just in case you wanted a review. Be reviewed by the public and approved by the regional council. You'll recall back in June when we came to this body, we requested that we go out for public review and comment. That public review period began on the 25th of June and concluded on the 6th of August in preparation for our meeting today so that we could take a recommendation from this body to the regional council on the 25th. Now, we had two public review and comment periods or open house opportunities for the public. But something that was significant and made a significant impact to our public review and comment period this time around was our interactive map. And you might recall that we introduced this also at this body, how we perceived that it might work and what we might gain from utilizing this resource. And as you can tell, included in your packet, we had a successful public review and comment period. Not many attended our open houses, both the online and the physical open houses. There were several, but we got the majority of our comments and interaction as soon as this is coming up here. This is where we should add the Olympic song, I guess. Anyway, you're able to access this. In your packet, you've got a copy of all the comments that were received. And as you have opportunity to review, you can go onto the interactive map and you can highlight, every one of these dots is one of the comments. So you can highlight that dot and come up with one of the comments. Okay, well that one's not coming up. And you can see and review the comment. Now also, in addition to the agendas that were at the front, we had a summary of the comment, public comments that were received, as well as the responses.
Okay, that's just, is this on the table? Or you,
it is.
Oh, these are on everybody's table?
Oh, no, it's just on the table.
I'm digging through my paper. I can't find this one.
We'll pass it around. We just left it on the table up front. So in the packet, there's the detailed comments, comment by comment. There's almost 100 of them, and individual responses to those comments. And then this sheet that Muriel is handing out contains a summary of the comments and a summary of the responses, and on the back side of it, there's a bit about the process for obtaining public comment. So.
Thank you. Any questions on any parts of the transportation improvement program that's being proposed for recommendation to the regional council, the air quality conformity finding, or the public comments?
Can I make a quick comment?
Please.
So I wanted to point out and thank Wasatch Front. So we at UTA utilize Wasatch Front's TIP program of public comments. In our, every year we get a lot of money from the federal government in terms of preventative maintenance. And so we used to do our own outreach, and we decided a couple years ago to combine with both Wasatch Front and MAG with their outreach and the TIP. And so thank you, Ben, for accommodating that. And so it's a way for us sometimes to hear from people about general transit questions as well in this process.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Yes. I move that we approve
this. We've never had a better presentation. He should be commended on the presentation of this, and I don't know how you can deny it.
There you go, Ben. You're the best. Okay, we have a motion by Mayor...
I just want to know if we have to give him a gold medal.
Yes.
Only if you're going to tax him.
We have a motion by Mayor Marshall.
Second by... Second. James Ebert.
Okay.
Second by Ebert.
And we have a comment here.
Thanks. Just so you'll be a little more familiar, like at your range, you would encourage you to take a look at these public comments that we received. But just to give you a little flavor, it's not that the comments will necessarily change projects that are on the tip, but they'll help guide some of the future discussion as the regional council staff and UDOT staff and UTA staff work together to evaluate needs and look at potential solutions. It's been very, almost all, if not all, of the comments of the 90 comments were pretty constructive. And so we'll be working with UDOT and UTA to look at potential ways to address these comments.
Okay. Do we have a mechanism in place where, you know, this comment period, this public comment period ought to be ongoing, my thinking is, and is that we have these workshops or whatever meetings we have as we give people opportunities to comment, but do we have a mechanism in place where people can, you know, that maybe not wasn't able to go or attend, and yet things evolve and change as time goes on, we ought to have some way of taking in comments and perhaps responding or addressing.
Ben, do you have the answer to that?
We actually do, Aaron. Both the Department of Transportation, UTA, and our offices. We're always open for public comment. We don't formally bring them up to this body, usually. Because of federal law, we have to have a 30-day public review and comment period that we report back to this body, and this body recommends to the regional council so we can approve the TIP. But we are actually, as practicing, trying to encourage and have ongoing public comment.
Good.
I think that we're always open to comments from the public. It helps us do our jobs better. You know, as Wayne mentioned, the overwhelming majority of the comments were very constructive. So it wasn't just about the quantity, even though we received an unprecedented number. It's also about the quality of those comments. So now that we have this online engagement tool, you know, the interactive map that Ben showed with the public comment layer, and I wanted to say, you know, thanks to UDOT, because we were able to use a lot of the data that you guys already had publicly available. We worked with you guys to develop that map. We can absolutely look at, you know, exploring ways where we can continue to receive comments like that from the public, you know, via an interactive map. It helps to have, like, a very set period of time, because people's attention spans are so short, to say, hey, if you want to comment on the TIP, this is your time to do it, and it kind of kicks them into action. So, again, we're always open and receptive to comments, but I think we're trying to well take it. If you have the tools out there to solicit comments, you know, let's look at ways of doing that.
It just seems like we're living in a time of public scrutiny, and it's always good to have transparency and be open to dialogue and appreciate, you know, comments that are made. It's always good to have that positive approach.
I agree.
You know, Mayor, the process we've gone through to get to this point, did we vote yet? Did they vote
yet?
No. Okay. On the vote you're about to take, is an extensive one, as you know. And so there's the technical 30-day window for public comment. But every stage of the process, every meeting in which this topic has been discussed, is noticed and made available to the public. We have a public comment period. So your point is well taken, and we strive to be as transparent as possible in our processes at every step of the process. Thank you.
Chair, really quick questions. So the first comment in here talks about the TIP being car heavy, so to speak, and requests maybe there's some more emphasis placed on active transportation and transit. were these comments about the TIP as an entirety, or were these specific general areas within the transportation plan?
Both, in reference to the summary there. There were some project specific, and then there were some that was overall. But I think the response there, the way it was addressed there, approached both of them.
Okay.
Okay, so I have a motion and a second over here.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Andrew, on this car heavy comment that's in that particular one there, why do we know that it was or was not car heavy? What measuring stick was put against that comment to determine whether that's a valid comment? See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And that's why I asked that, because if it was only a certain part of it, then we could really focus in on see if that's true. But if it's a general...
car heavy, something over 300 or under 20, and
I think a more detailed response could be something like, we're a little constrained by funding, amount of funding sources available.
Okay.
There, some of the funding sources are restricted as to what they can be spent for. Some are more flexible, but some are restricted. And so we do feel like there's a balance. There are multiple modes addressed, and even within projects that appear to be car heavy, there are often elements that provide for active transportation and transit.
Just on the tails of that and CMAQ funding, what are the chances? I think I asked once a long time ago, but what are the chances of us ever getting a greater amount of CMAQ funds, particularly to address the alternative transportation?
The CMAQ fund of funds is allocated based on population, a population formula, I believe, developed by Congress. And so that tends to grow over time as the population grows, the amount of funding that's coming to the states or CMAQ. But I'm not aware, Steve, if you want to say anything different, I'm not aware of any anticipated large increases in CMAQ funds.
And the answer to the second part, I'd say yes. Where Utah's in a particularly bad position is that previously it was determined by population is one of the factors, but your air quality status, and you happen to be in attainment for carbon monoxide, and you happen to be in attainment for ozone currently, and so Utah gets the minimum. You have no non-attainment areas or pollutants that figure into the formula. That's because it was prior to PM 2.5 and 10 being in existence. They have not updated that formula. They told me that they're considering it, but they didn't with this new act, so it'll be another 5 years before they do it again.
And Steve, is there ever, would there be use of a body like this, writing a letter or any kind of communication when that time comes around of that consideration? Would an endorsement be anything useful in that
sure.
process? I remember you telling me years ago that we should get more CMAQ money. But, though we don't have control over that, there's a couple factors and reasons why.
They've heard that from other people, but yeah, I think that always more people say this is really equitable.
You let us know. Thanks, Steve.
Just more generally, CMAQ is a particular federal program which is designed to improve air quality and congestion mitigation and air quality, and CMAQ. It's a very small slice, relatively speaking, very small slice of the overall TIP. And then even more broadly, the overall regional transportation, long-range regional transportation plan for both the RTP and the TIP in its entirety, in their entirety, having good air quality is an overall goal. So, and you know this, right, that one of the objectives of our entire program and our entire plan is to try to have as good air quality as possible. So I appreciate your question, but I just wanted to note that that's one directed funding source within. We're trying to use all of our resources and consider air quality, among other goals, as we structure the entire program.
Okay. Good.
Call for order.
Call for order.
Okay.
Let's get this back on track. No. Good discussion. All right. The next item is a...
Vote?
We did.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, I think so.
Did we?
I think so. Which way did you vote? Yes or no? You may have to pull that back.
Very shame that we're talking.
We voted, sorry. Okay. The next item is overview of Wasatch Front Regional Council programs for local governments. I think there's $35-40 million that comes through the Wasatch Front to be handed out or dealt out or administered out. We got Lanise Davenport. She's going to jump in here and tell us all about some of these programs.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am happy today to let you all know that we are sort of kicking off our new funding program year here at the Wasatch Front Regional Council. And really the purpose of today's presentation is just to remind you that we have 6 funding programs, that they are a resource to all of you out there, and that we ask that you consider actually making an application for one or more of these funding programs. So these are the 6 different programs that we offer here at the Regional Council. We're fortunate, you're fortunate, we're fortunate, because each of the program managers is actually going to come up and present to you the information about each of the programs that they manage or administer. Let me back up by just taking 1 second to remind you all that the Wasatch Front Regional Council is really unique, and we're very uniquely positioned in a way that we can really consider local and regional planning and programming in a way that maybe many cities and counties may not necessarily do that. And we have a variety of resources that can really consider, plan, and implement short and long range activities. So in addition to myself, I'll be talking about the Economic Development District, and then I'll be followed by Sam Clem, who's going to describe the CDBG program, Julia Collins, who's going to talk about the Transportation and Land Use Connection program, and then Ben Wishwich will take the final 3 there. All right, so just briefly, let me talk a little bit about the Wasatch Front Economic Development District. We're a unique program in that we're not really a program, we're more of an entity. We are an entity created by the U.S. Economic Development Administration to really consider regional economic development activities. We're governed by an 11-member board. It's our governing body that's made up of public and private sector representatives. Then we have a larger 21-member strategy committee that's responsible for creating a regional economic development strategy, or RESES is what we probably refer to that plan. All members of our district do represent the main economic interests of the region, so that's one of the sort of key elements of being on our board or on our committee. This just gives you an idea of the type of things that we want to grow or develop as part of the district. We really seek to implement our mission through the implementation of these economic goals here. And they highlight the types of activities that would really support funding when entities are seeking dollars from the U.S. Economic Development Administration, which is the entity that not only funds us, the district, but then can fund the projects you may seek in furthering these types of goals. So what do we do? I've already sort of briefly highlighted touched on the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, or CEDS. That's one of our main things that we do, our main objective. A couple of the other things that we do, we can provide economic analysis. So we can create, we're currently working to integrate economic development with transportation and land use. I have a 1-page sheet with me that really highlights what we're doing in that regard that I'm happy to share with anybody if you're interested. We also, as I've kind of briefly highlighted on too, we support local and regional projects. So if an entity, if you're interested in seeking funding from the U.S. Economic Development Administration to build, say, a business depot or some more capital-related costs for infrastructure expenses, those are the types of things that you can do those are the types of projects you can receive money for in your EDA. The real principal objective there, though, is that you have to create jobs. All right, so activities and successes. So I already touched on the 3 key strategies, 1-pager that we're working on now, and the idea there is that we really want to ensure economic development is considered in all short and long range efforts. The second one listed here, the project support. So Quartier Foundry partnered up with Endeavor Insight out of New York City. Quartier is a local company, and they partnered with Endeavor Insight out of New York to really think about what our entrepreneurship system looks like. And they developed a really cool ecosystem network map for entrepreneurs. And I'm just going to highlight here what Rhett Morris of Endeavor Insight said about this project and about Utah. Utah is the first state and first multi-cluster map that they will build. Utah is a place that has seen some pretty significant successes in its history. It can be a role model for other communities. The things we're learning here in Utah are going to help us create lessons that we're going to share with people in other communities across the United States and cities and states across the world. So just give you an idea of the types of things that can be funded through the district. And that's it. That's my quick two-piece. And Sam Quinn is up next.
Thank you, Lanice.
I'm here with the Wasatch Management Council staff, and I'm the administrator for this Community Development Block Grant Program. We administer for Weber, Morgan, and Tooele counties, and the cities therein, with the exception of Ogden City, which is considered what we call an entitlement city with sufficient population that they just received on the grid. The program is for projects, which is to fund projects for low to moderate income populations, individuals, groups, families, and that's defined as a family, for example, that has 80% or less of the area median income. And we fund a lot of public service activities, for example, food banks, things like that. Public service vehicles. I understand in Southern Utah we buy a lot of fire trucks. We could buy, for example, the Meals on Wheels truck. Mobile Slum and Blight, we have a project for that up in Harrisville right now. ADA accessibility improvements, for example, a curb cut or an upgrade to a bathroom. Property acquisition for housing for low to moderate income persons. We don't get involved so much in the actual construction, but we're able to buy the land. Property acquisition for other public purposes. For example, we'll talk in just a moment about buying some land in other areas. Construction, reconstruction of water lines, sewer lines, streets, curb gutter, and sidewalks. We do have some projects like that. We have a big one up in Roy right now, for example. Here's a few examples of what we're doing. Washington Terrace City, we're funding the acquisition of some firefighter equipment, a thermal camera, for example, and the oxygen bottles that the firefighters wear as they go into a burn bay. In Tooele County, we'll be helping to fund the construction of the Children's Justice Center. They're not this year, but next in 2017-2018. In Huntsville Town, we're helping to replace a 90-year-old water line. So those are examples of some of what we do. We do get about $1 million a year from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to spread around for these different projects. We do have a prioritization process and committee appointed by the three different COGs in these counties to help select these projects. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. If not, I'll turn the time over to my co-worker, Julie Collins, to talk about the transportation land use program.
Thanks, Sam. I'm glad I get to go ahead of Ben. I don't have any songs, or I know you're up next, Ben. So the Transportation Land Use Connection Program, our goals and mission are to look to support you with your challenging planning projects that relate to economic development, land use, and transportation. We look to reduce travel demand by enabling shorter commutes, providing more travel choices, look to land use strategies that will support that transportation. We want to think about projects that have local and regional impact and really help support local communities. You know, these places are challenging to create. So this is a list of projects that we've funded in the past. You are not limited to this list with your project idea. You know, it doesn't have to fit on this list. That's the beautiful thing. You fit with the goals and the programs, or you don't know what your challenge is, but you know that maybe you guys are struggling with thinking about how transportation and land use can work together in your community, or how there's a nexus between economic development and transportation, and you want to bring that more to your community. We can work with you on your project type. So just to get the juices flowing, we also have our website that has all of the projects that we've funded over the past 3 years, so you can look at those. There's
sample applications and sample finished products and deliverables. And last, I'm going to leave you with, this is a project we funded in 2016. It's a partnership between Davis County and Bountiful, the City of Bountiful, along a future BRT corridor and bus rapid transit for BRT. And what they're looking at is, the BRT is in the plan. It's in the works. It's coming to this corridor. But the critical point of how does the land use interact with those future stations is what the core of this project is looking at. Well, the project will explore a vision for each of those stations. It will explore the connectivity, the transportation, the accessibility. It will look at what the market can bear relative to future land uses, and ultimately result in a plan, a vision, and a land use policy update in a form-based code format. So this is really exciting. It's comprehensive. It's integrating all of those different things together, and moving forward a lot of the goals that Bountiful and Davis County have. Now I'll pass it over to, oh, yes.
What are applications due for the next round of funding?
Great question. Is it okay if I jump into that? Okay. I don't know if you have any music or nettles or anything, Ben, in your presentation to do that. But Ben's going to attack that, the deadlines and timeline for you, Mayor. Okay. So I'll hand it over to you.
Just had a question. Other question.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Well, as we look, a lot of those projects will have to have ongoing maintenance and other. Who funds that? Is that delegated in the responsibilities of the local municipality once they've got these projects put in place to keep upgrading?
I'm not sure I understand when you say maintenance. Do you mean policy?
Well, I'm just
education?
Saying,
you know.
I got it. Mayor Freeman, you're referring not so much to the sort of the planning projects and all through the transportation and land use connection, but more generally, if we're funding like the construction of, you know, a bike path or a roadway, the ongoing maintenance of that, if it's a local project, so if Harriman gets money from one of our programs to fund a local road project and bike lanes and everything, the answer is yes. The responsibility rests with the local community, owner of that facility. Now, the resources for that, as you know, can come from the gas tax or from your general funds, but it is the responsibility of the facility owner. Same thing for UDOT and UTA.
So is that communicated, when that money is awarded for these projects, is that communicated to say, you know, here we're gonna make a great footprint in your community, but you also have a responsibility to keep it up and to... And to take that, I mean, it's easy to get the money, but the community or organizations would have to have that.
You know, we've been the recipient of a couple of funds for these projects. This TLC program is just the planning stage. So it doesn't fund any actual installation of projects. It's really more a planning tool, land use tool, things of that help you decide how you're going to do things. Then, if you want to apply for CMAQ funds or SDB funds or things like that, actually execute the project, that's different. So we did a big planning for 14th Boulevard and the mouth of the Common Canyon, and they helped fund that study. And that's what this
that's just a preliminary process.
This is just the study phase. Am I not correct on that?
That's correct. And I'm interpreting, Mayor Freeman, your question as a broader question.
I'm probably ahead of the game.
Yeah, so Mayor Cullimore is right, of course, but then when we actually get to project construction funding, the maintenance is something that has to be considered. Maybe, Ben, you can weave that in as you're talking.
Thank you.
Just ask a question.
Absolutely.
So this whole process of taking land use and integrating it into transportation, integrating in the economic development component in a systems approach, and then reviewing all that to find out, okay, how do we line this out? How do we zone? What businesses do we attract? How do we create the transportation corridors? What works for active transportation? That's a large process. It's kind of a visioning process. Mm-hmm. But it's a process that you can apply in one project. Do we then give the tools to the cities or the counties so that they can take that same type of, you know, step-by-step process into the next, so we don't have to come back over and over and over to the same funding source to do it? Is there a process to teach us or to pass those tools along to the cities to continue down the corridor or another part of the city?
Those are great questions. Absolutely. Right now, we don't have a formal training to be able to explain some of the projects that we're working on so they can be brought to you and your staff. But the way that we've approached it in the past has been we have successful projects, we have case studies, and when a community comes to us on these are some of the challenges we're experiencing, and they apply for funding, we can bring some of those tools to the scope and to the projects. And I'm also going to kind of bounce it back to you. We're working with Roy City right now that Weber County has been an incredible partner on, and we're doing just that. We're creating a template and looking at how the project can not only benefit Roy City's vision, but how it could be transferable in the future in that context too. So you're going to be up here and you're going to be presenting on the template and teaching everyone else, I foresee, in the near future. And I'm going to hire Mayor Comore to also advertise our program. You guys are excellent. So without further ado, I'm going to hand this over to Ben. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wonderful. So, thanks, Julia. And I meant she could go ahead and tell you the schedule. I was going to whistle or yodel during my part here, but I think we'll just stick with the text. So we've got three funding programs that we also have the responsibility that we've talked about multiple times when we come to this body, and that's the Surface Transportation Program, or SDP, the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality, or CMAQ, and the Transportation Alternatives Program, or the TAP funds. So in the Surface Transportation Program, to answer some of the questions, these funds come to us yearly, but we're 6 years out in our programming on the SDP and the CMAQ funds. So in the request for coordinating with the local governments, if they're coming to apply for these funds, we're helping them. If that project's successful into the program, we're meeting with them in orientation meetings, helping them realize that they're going to have a match that's coming up. There'll be a document called the Federal Aid Agreement where all of that is spelled out and when they need to pay and how they need to pay and when that all happens so that that match is ready. In that Federal Aid Agreement is also determined the responsibilities that are theirs, that after the project's completed, they need to maintain, take care of it, and keep it up to standards. So I hope that kind of helps. So in the three types of funds, the SDP funds is our most general type of funds. These projects, or these funds, can be used on projects, any projects that's on a federal aid eligible system. They can be used to widen or reconstruct facilities as long as that facility is on a federal aid eligible type facility, meaning a collector or an arterial or a highway or a freeway. They can replace the bridges or reconstruct existing facilities. I got an example. Back in 2009, this body took action on a project on 5600 West. This is what the project used to look like. It was a narrow two-lane road with shoulders in some location, some sidewalk on one side of the road, open field on the other side of the road. When this body approved this project, it was for a five-lane cross-section that would include improvements for bike and ped and other modes of transportation. This is what the project looks like now. Recently opened within the past year with the bike facilities striped right on the road, in addition to the shoulder, two lanes of traffic per direction with the center turn lane, and then sidewalk and lighting down both sides of the facility. It was pointed out after I sat down that there was a comment made or a concern on auto heavy type comments or vehicle heavy type. Scott Hess, who's our active transportation coordinator for the office, he leaned over and he said she should have taken an opportunity to boast a little, because in this last go-round, when this body approved the projects that we just approved as part of the new Transportation Improvement Program, there was over $14.8 million applied to active transportation components. Now, there's only about $1.4 million available in the TAP funds, so there was significant input from the CMAQ as well as the SDP funds. Well, the CMAQ kind of monies, those monies are a little different. They have to be on projects that will demonstrate air quality benefits. We've got to show some benefits for those projects. Some of the projects that are successful with this one would be the construction or the purchase of public transportation facilities, the commuter bicycle pedestrian facilities. Other ones that would be is the ITS, or Intelligent Transportation System improvements. And yet another one would be intersection improvements that would address the turning movements. Those would all demonstrate every one of these projects and air quality type of a benefit. These would be eligible type projects for the CMAQ funds. Then we have our transportation alternative program funds. This is kind of the fund side of the pot of the money. These are for non-motorized types of facilities. This would be more of your recreational. This would be more, could address some of the recreational uses in our transportation system. This would include improvements to sidewalks, bicycle infrastructure, traffic calming, lighting. But one of the big ones that really come in here, it's been an ongoing program, is right here. The Safe Routes to School projects are also projects that are eligible for the TAP type funds. So with that, a good example is the DNRG rail trail. As you're aware, or maybe aware, from 400 North and West Bountiful, clear down here to the south, all the way up to Roy, to Hinckley Drive, we've got the DNRG rail trail, constructed with multiple types of funds, CMAQ funds, transportation enhancement funds, TAP funds. There's also preparations to extend the trail from the DNRG under Hinckley Drive up here to SR 108. And in addition to that, I keep hitting the wrong button. We go from 108, which is off the screen right here, all the way up to 12th Street up here in Weber County. So halfway through Weber County, all the way down to Fort North. From Fort North, you can use the Shoreline Trail and go all the way down to Utah County. So significant improvements that are being done through transportation alternative projects or program funds. So what does that mean? Well, as it was reviewed and also asked, the application. So letters of intent, there's going to be a request for letters of intent that will be sent out later part of September. Those letters of intent will be due back to us in October. Then applications will be due to us by the middle part of January. And then we'll begin the evaluation process to identify the projects in each of the programs that have been discussed with you today. And we'll be back to this point next year, reviewing all the new projects to come. Are there any questions on any of the programs? Thank you.
Excellent job, Ben. Appreciate it.
So Ben, the members that are here in the meeting today, they get to divide up all the money that's available, right?
Yeah.
Reasonable.
Is that a motion?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not allowed to make that motion. I'm sorry.
I'm willing.
Mary Ann.
Were you going to mention the deadline on the TLC?
Actually, the TLC is running in conjunction with this.
Okay, so all of them, this follows, there's letters of intent from the DLC as well as SKP's back all that.
Yes, and we'll try to have it uniform so it helps your staff and then we can help them in where they need to go.
Mayor, what you're going to see, like we did last year, there'll be an email, that one email that goes out to everybody, sorry, not just the folks that are here, but to everybody, that announces that the whole schedule, and it's coordinated and streamlined across all the programs, and it'll lay out all of the deadlines, and that email goes out mid-September, okay, and then what's roughly the first timeline for the bullets right in front of us, right, so mid-September that level will go out for all of them, and we'll lay out in detail, and you'll have about a month to submit, or a month and a half to submit the first step, which is low bar, easy, just the letters of intent for all of the programs.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Item number four, action on self-certification of the planning process. We got Wayne Bennett here. We're required each year to certify that we're following federal regulations. So Wayne's going to go into great detail on that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So you'll see in your packets under this item some documentation on how the Regional Council and UDOT and UTA are complying with the federal regulations for conducting the regional transportation planning process in the region. There's a section on organization, a section on technical elements, such as modeling, public involvement, data analysis, air quality, many technical elements. I think that goes like from page 2 to page 16. So that's the majority of it. And then a couple other pieces at the end talking about the principal products such as the RTP and the TIP. And then a little bit on other requirements at the end. So if you have any questions or comments on any of the documentation here, or if there's anything else Steve would like to add in terms of the self-certification, every 4 years and next year will be, we'll hit the 4 year mark. Every 4 years, the Federal Highway Administration representatives from FHWA and FTA come out and conduct a review, but there's still a requirement every year that the Regional Council and the DOT self-certify that we're complying with the federal regulations.
Do you think we could report a case of our unified plan for them to look at?
Thank you, Peter Colomore. Recently, they do get plenty of copies of that. Recently, the Federal Highway Administration and FTA started doing a planning finding that's issued about October 1 of each year. And in that, they present some commendations as well as suggestions for improvement or enhancement to the process. And one of the things they've called out recently as a commendation is that unified plan. So thank you.
So Wayne, historically, you know, we've been doing the self-certification for I'm not sure how
long
many years
time.
Now. A long time. And when they've come out and checked us, have they found very many findings that we haven't been in compliance with, or are we doing a pretty good job of self-certifying?
Excellent question. So I don't remember any issues with self-certification. The certification or the review that they conduct, it used to be every 3 years. There are three levels, I think, of findings they can make. There are corrective actions, there are recommendations, and maybe one other. But the last time I remember a corrective action for this area was back in 99. And I don't think we've had any corrective actions since then.
Are you primarily responsible for that? Because it looks like there's a lot of detail in here. Are you the?
I'm just the organizer. Everybody on the staff contributes to documenting how we're complying. And then, as I mentioned, we appreciate the review and input and coordination from UDOT and UTA in preparing these certifications.
Wayne is being a little modest, customarily modest, and then he tracks all of these things and makes sure, one of his roles is to make sure that the programs that he manages are following the regulations, and also helps everybody else in the office do that as well. So, you know, he deserves a lot of the credit for this work. So thank you, Wayne.
Yeah, thank you.
That's good, impressive. With that, I think we need a motion to make a motion that Transcom recommends to the Regional Council approval of a resolution certifying the transportation planning process.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have a motion by Milt Maliski, and a second by Colomore. I knew it started with a C. Okay, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Agenda item number 5, Proposition 1 update. There's a Proposition 1 is where there was a sales tax added to go towards transportation. I know that a number of years ago, it was about a year before the Proposition 1 was thought of, Clinton City became concerned about its roads, and so we did a comprehensive asphalt or a road study to find out what kind of condition our roads were in and what kind of funding would be needed to keep them up to speed. And the result of that is we determined that we were woefully underfunded. And I think transportation and that, you know, asphalt is one of those things that you can get away with as a mayor, city council, commissioner, whatever, kicking the can down the road a little bit, but sooner or later you're going to have to end up paying the price for it. Well, we had discussions with my council is, you know, do we continue to kick this can down the road? And it was, you know, that's not the right thing to do. And what we ended up doing is we implemented a about a 25% property tax increase to go exclusively to the roads in Clinton City. And we did that with full knowledge that we were only going to hit about the 55, 60% funding that we actually needed. We knew and we were hopeful that more money would be coming down the pipe. With Proposition 1 and the anticipated amount of funding that would be coming with it, we're up to about 77%. We're not 100% yet. Our study showed us that we had 40 miles of road that had to be replaced in about 17 years. And you do the math backwards and you find out that that's a lot of money. Well, also the asphalt treatments, if you don't treat your asphalt on a regular basis, at least this is what I'm being told, that it won't, you won't get your 30 to 40 year lifespan out of it. You might get, you know, 25 years out of it if you don't put your surface coatings on it. So anyway, the bottom line is that we recognize that there was a big price tag, and with that proposition money, we're intending on putting a lot of that into our roads. We also have some trails through the city that right now are in good condition, but in the next 5 years they're going to start needing to be replaced and refurbished, and so we're going to be spending money on that. But I think that Proposition 1, at least in my perspective, was a good thing. I think it's something that would be very beneficial for Salt Lake County to follow the same as we did up in Davis County, and I believe Weaver County did also. But I think that the shift to sales tax is actually something I think is appropriate, because you can't just hammer the guy at the gas pump for the bike paths and for the trail systems and the you know, the other amenities that we're putting in. They're costing a lot of money, and I think the sales tax really captures the whole populace. Even the you know, person doesn't even drive a car benefits from the good transportation infrastructure that's required for buses and everything else. So I'm actually an advocate of a state sales tax rather than a county imposed one, or not rather than, but I think that's the way the state ought to approach transportation needs. But that's enough of me talking. So I think that Mayor Malisky is going to speak on that.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We actually, in Pleasant View, I commissioned a comprehensive road study as well last year. It came back with our just under 40 miles of road with a $14 million asset value. And to take the roads anywhere from a 10-year remaining service life to a 20-year remaining service life, that maintenance bill was $13 million. So previous to the Prop 1 and the gas tax change, we were only receiving about $250,000 a year on the BNC road funds, which covered basically nothing. And if the maintenance and the overlays and the seal codes are what actually gets you to that 30, 40-year effective life. So prior to the Prop 1, we instituted a transportation utility fee in the city, which effectively was approximately a 50% property tax increase, but it's billed monthly on our utility bill. North Ogden has done it. I think Kaysville, several cities have done it, and it works fine. It goes directly into the road fund, nothing else. There's no questionable accounting from the public that it went into the general fund and we used it for X or this or that. So it's been nice. Just before we did that, we had purchased a crack sealing machine, because we had done, I looked at having some done, and the price and what you get for what you pay for, it was cheaper for us to buy the machine and then purchase the crack seal, and we've done that for 2 years now. This, and we do it in the spring and in the fall on the temperature, that 50 degree range. This summer we purchased a semi-truck load of it because we saved like 5 cents a pound for, they charge you 5 cents a pound to hold it at their facility for you, which saved like $800, so buy it, we got plenty of room. So with our transportation utility fee of about $125,000 a year, our estimated Prop 1 gas tax is just over $130,000 for us, and our BNC is now about $265,000, $270,000. We have about $525,000 a year that we can dedicate towards maintenance. We just spent $330,000 on chip seal and patch replacement, and we still have about $200,000 or so we'll try and spend before winter comes. And then we'll start the process again next year and spend another $500,000 until they vote me out of office.
Is that money make you whole?
No. We will come up short. We're about 45% of what our maintenance needs is. We calculated we have about a $1.1 million maintenance need per year to keep them on a 20-year remaining service life schedule. That's what it would take to keep spend that much, and these roads would be on past the 20-year service life. We've got some that we've had quite a few complaints when we did this. Well, you're billing us, why aren't you fixing our road? Well, to spend $30,000 to chip seal it is wasting money because it needs an $80,000 grind and overlay. And it's frustrating to tell the people, the four of them that live on the cul-de-sac, that I'm sorry, I'm not fixing your road.
The roads are too bad to patch up anymore. Yeah. I'm not going to spend any more on them.
So we all agreed that we will do the highest, most traveled, best roads first, because the new ones that we have, we're going to kick their service life out even farther, and then the highest traveled ones, and that's what we did this last month. We're wrapping up right now on that project.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Searle.
Yep, Dole's there.
Right there.
Norm.
Guy that's cursing this.
But he loves me because he's a kind, gentle soul.
First of all, regarding Proposition 1, I'd just like to say I was an advocate of Proposition 1. I really believed in it. I think there was a good job of education, probably a great job by the Utah League of Cities and Towns, Wasatch Front Regional Capital. UTA did things, but I found that those that were educated saw what the problems were, the state of our infrastructure, the effect it could have on our economic development. I think those were the people that were in favor of Proposition 1. I think it probably didn't pass in some counties just because it was hard to educate the people how much it was needed. At the same time, I saw a lot of articles in the newspapers, and I think the whole problem is nationwide. Federal funding, everything, you know, they show pictures of bridges and roads that were just basically falling apart, so there was a lot of need there. I was really happy to see the voters of Weber County approve the proposition. I wasn't sure that would happen. Same time, I felt bad that other counties didn't get the needed vote. I was really in favor of this Proposition 1, probably as much for other cities as I was our own city. I kind of was close with Mayor Taylor, Brett Taylor, North Ogden. Mayor Molesky mentioned the studies they did. And Mayor Taylor and I went down to Capitol one day, and we lobbied some of the state senators. We were able to do some good, but I saw the condition of some of those roads that he was concerned with, and I know there's a lot of problems statewide, so I just think it was a real good thing that, along with the change in the gas tax, which hadn't been changed for a long time. A few things here on how we're using Prop 1 money. Riverdale City, naturally the repair and maintenance of existing roads. We have a lot of roads need some type of roadway completion with curb gutter and sidewalk. We've been kind of a rural area for a lot of years, and some roads need widening. We've got one road, Ritter Drive, pretty well known in Weaver County. It was used as a collector road, but it was never designed for that. There was a real safety problem because of the width, lack of sidewalks. And with this Proposition 1, we're able to put some money aside, and I think in a few years we can make some major improvements. We actually, in 2009, City Council ruled to close one end of it, just one-way traffic, to limit the numbers of cars on it. And we're hopeful with some improvements in traffic calming measures and things from Proposition 1, we'll be able to get it back to full use in the future. We're doing curb replacement, sidewalk repair throughout the city. Riverdale is really proactive transportation. I really believe in that. We just started a major project yesterday that we're really excited about. And we just believe pedestrian bikers need a safe place to travel. Looking at trail connections, one project we're looking at working with Washington Terrace is to connect Washington Terrace and Riverdale. Parkway Trail along the river with the trail, and we're working with them, National Park Service, UTA, and others to try to make that happen. We have other trails, trail extensions, and pedestrian bridges that are needed throughout the city, and we're just systematically working toward those kind of things. Some areas of our city are not very well lit. Street lighting, we're looking at improving street lighting in the community and have it better lit. So that's how we're using it. We're glad we've got it. I think you can use probably as much as available to put it to good use, and that's what we're trying to do with the money. Any questions for me? Thank you.
Commissioner Ebert, did you want to talk about what Weaver County is doing?
Yeah, well, I'll keep it kind of short. I think we've kind of, all of us, especially the mayors, have touched on that much of this is deferred maintenance and safety issues we've already as commissioners or mayors have identified. And so we'll continue on that. We have over 200 lane miles that we have to maintain also, and then we have a vibrant community that uses the pathways and other active transportation. So we're definitely focused on that. I think the one thing I wanted to say above and beyond is something that was touched on earlier is there has been an issue with Prop 1 on creating a sales tax structure that is imbalanced and is causing issues between the counties, especially with larger purchases, car lots and things like that. And so, you know, that continues to be my concern. I think at some point it'll have to be addressed, but the funds are definitely being used where needed for safety and, you know, the deferred maintenance.
Okay, thank you. UTA, Matt?
Civil? Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. So really briefly, as a quick reminder, lead up to Prop 1, our Board of Trustees was really clear about how they wanted us to spend the money. And we had done a lot of research and engaged with our customers over the past couple of years to know that we needed to add new service. So that was our primary focus with Prop 1. And of course, that's what's happening in Weber County, Davis County, and Tooele. You know, we lost our good mayor here, but we're adding service in all three counties. We actually launched a lot of our new service initiatives just 4 days ago, August 14th. So I won't read through all these, but we have 12 routes that saw improvements, either through improved frequency, so how often the bus comes during the day, to span of service, how late the bus comes in the evening. We also added a lot of weekend service to certain routes, and we've seen mainly on routes that have high demand, and people who have jobs that are on the weekends or at off times have really appreciated that. So we're closely tracking that, and we're going to be very open and transparent about how people are using the services we're building, and we're finalizing a dashboard of sorts we need to demonstrate to them. Not only problem counties where it passed, but also just our overall service areas to how we're utilizing those resources. That's kind of for this year. The next year and the following year, so if you were to ask us how much have we how much of the overall Prop 1 money have we allocated to service that would be dedicated ongoing service? It's about 50% of that money. We've heard back from some of our stakeholders up north. They'd like to work with us to take another look at how we utilize spending those resources and to make sure it's the right balance of service, as well as some capital initiatives about bus stops and amenities and those kinds of things. So we want to take another look at that and make sure we get that balance right. So we're kind of doing that right now, and we're going to kind of reset that process and make sure that we get the right mix of improvements at the station, as well as the ongoing service that, as we all know, once we start a new service, we want it to be right, because we don't want to pull back on that service. That's an ongoing thing that we dedicate towards. So real briefly, that's kind of where we're at. So thank you.
Okay, any questions?
Thank you. Can I just add really quickly, again, that's to Julia's point, how important it is to have this systems approach in our transportation, because that becomes a big part of our land use, economic drivers, and those type of things. So sometimes we don't think of our mass transit or our UTA partners as part of that overall mix when we're looking at creating urban cores, urban centers, and things like that. And we have to look at everything. And sometimes we miss things, and then we're like, oh, now we have to back this up. And so, again, that's a great flaw. Sorry, I'll be quiet.
Wayne, you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Melbourne from Davis County gave me a few things he'd like to talk or have said here. They get about $2 million a year, or will be getting about $2 million a year, and they're going to be addressing all modes of transportation with an emphasis on regional type projects, and also looking for partnering opportunities. They've got some priorities within the county that they want to spend the funds on, as well as they'll make a portion of the funds available to the cities within Davis County to apply for, and with the intent to help the dollars go farther and again focus on things more regional in nature. One example, they're already getting underway a trolley service in coordination with cooperation with UTA and Layton City, as well as private businesses, running a trolley service running from Clearfield Front Runner Station to Hill Air Force Base to Layton Hills Mall, that whole business area, and to the Layton Front Runner Station. They're using some of their Prop 1 funds to help implement that trolley service, along with funds from UTA and private entities.
Thank you.
On behalf of Salt Lake County, would like to thank you for rubbing it in.
Mayor Seguini was taking notes to talk to her constituents for the next time it's on the ballot.
Yeah. My constituents passed it.
What we started to do after, and we have our parade route, we started to do roads, and then when the whole lappy tappy and stuff, all that, we just blend that into the road. So we have a road route each year.
There you go. That's innovation and efficiency in government right there.
That's good for at least 3 months. Yeah.
Then item six, congestion management report. Wayne, you want to kick this one off?
Thank you, Mayor. Just briefly, normally we bring to this group a report on a few trends related to congestion management. In addition, so we'd like to kind of shorten the trends presentation this go around, and also add an example of a current or a near-term project that helps either increase efficiency or decrease demand for single-occupant vehicle travel. That's really the emphasis of the congestion management process of the Regional Council, is to figure out ways to help implement ways to either increase the efficiency of the system or reduce demand for single-occupant vehicle travel. Today we've got Kip Billings in our office, from our office, to talk a bit about trends and then
he'll turn the time over to Eric Rasband. He's the transportation analysis, sorry, transportation operations and analysis and research manager. Is that close? Okay, thanks. Anyway, he'll tell a little bit about an innovative concept called managed motorways. So, Kip.
So we saved the best for last, right?
That's nice to say about Eric. Just kidding.
You'll be pleased to know I have just half a dozen slides, as Wayne said, to give you an idea of the trends in highway and transit performance. There's three slides in each area, starting with the transit. I think you've seen this slide before. Looking back to, 2001, the last 15 years, we've seen about a 50% increase in transit use. As the transit system has expanded, the tracks lines have been built and now are in full swing. And so we went from, about 30 million, just under 30 million transit boardings per year to about 47 million. So the buses, if you see the inset there, if I use this correctly, and in here, this is the daily ridership. So on any given weekday, about 180,000 boardings on the transit system. The buses are still proved to be the workhorse of the transit system at about 83,000 boardings per weekday. Trax is rapidly catching up to that, about 72,000 boardings per day. And then the front runner has expanded recently. Service into Utah County has started in 2013. Is that accurate, Matt?
That's right.
And so that's having a significant impact on transit use. Looking on an hourly basis through the course of a weekday, this is all of the trains, all of the buses that have a starting time in a given hour. You can see the relative share they're having. So in those peak periods in the morning when people are getting to work and late afternoon as they're returning, 12,000 to 16,000 boardings on the transit system, and so that's really helpful taking the peak off of the demand on the highways as well, so that the two systems work together in that sense. Looking at the consumption rate, if you will, of the transit system, this is the annual boardings per capita. So from a high of, I think that was 19.6 back in 2007, shortly after that we went into a recession that affected the number of jobs and the amount of commuting that affected transit ridership. There's also been some significant fluctuations in fuel prices. But through all that, the annual boardings per capita has been climbing back up. We're currently at about 19.2, just to give you a sense. So that increase in transit use isn't just because the population grew, there's more people out there. People are using the transit at a higher rate. So a few slides looking at the highway side of things. This first slide is the BMT and how that's been growing over the last 20 years. And to about 2002, you see a very steady growth year to year in BMT. But after 2002 or 2007, there's kind of an inflection point and that growth flattens out a little bit. It's still growing. And so the question is that growing because our population is growing? So this next slide looks at our consumption rate of driving, if you will, the BMT per capita. And since 2007, we see about an 8% decrease to today, the amount of driving per capita going down, whether that's the economy or other things affecting that. I think it would be a great master's thesis or some kind of research project. And these numbers are dampened a little bit from what I've shown you in the past. We looked again at the population estimates we were using were more aggressive than the more recent data. But we still see that decline over the last 7 years or so, the BNP per capita going down. And this is just a chart to give you a feel for the vehicle miles traveled by county and also by facility type. On the left is the amount of traffic on all of our arterials, and on the right is the freeways. Of course, we have a lot more miles of arterial roads out there. And arterials are vital for accessing businesses and getting to and from our homes. But there's actually, the freeways get a lot of attention for improvement in projects, and rightly so. But there's actually more traffic on the arterials, probably because there's just so many more miles of arterial roads.
Thank you. This is an interesting graphic. I'm just curious why Salt Lake is so all over the place for both of these, and it's steadier.
Part of what you're seeing is right here, just before the Olympics, when I-15 was under a major renovation. So a lot of that traffic got diverted to Redwood Road, State Street, and so forth. I don't know that I can explain some of the other fluctuations. I think, you know, right about there, you're seeing that same economic downturn. But I can't explain all of the dips and wiggles. There's some challenges with data collection as well. This is taken from samples, and then they have to expand that to the highway network.
It's not any inherent schizophrenia in Salt Lake County.
No. So.
Matt, when did Perona open?
Perona went north in 2008.
Okay. Something that dip.
There's a dip. There's a dip there. Maybe sort of.
So last thing I wanted to mention is that the freeways are vital for moving traffic from county to county, the longer trips, and that's essential to the system. So I wanted to turn some time over to Eric Rasband. He's going to talk about managed motorways and some innovations in freeway operations. After any other questions, yes, Eric?
Can we go back to that first slide that you had?
Do you remember the number?
Keep going. I'll let you know.
This one?
That one. Matt, maybe this question is for you, but it looks like maybe we've maxed out on bus. You see growth in the other sectors.
So we've been looking at this trend line for a long time with concern, and part of it is that when we opened up all these new lines, we did cut bus routes. And so that, when we reduce service, ridership goes down. So we're slowly trying to build that back up. But you're right. I mean, if you look, our bus, if you go back 20 years, we have had about the same ridership on the bus. And so that's one of our quests in life, is to focus on that and get people reacquainted with good bus service.
Matt, hasn't the role of buses changed somewhat, too, with the implementation of the light rail? The buses are now more a feeder system to the tracks, whereas prior to light rail, a lot of the buses went downtown.
Yeah, to some degree that's it too.
Has there been any study on active transportation in terms of riding bikes, getting interfacing with front runner tracks, and bus?
Yeah, I have a similar question. Has there been an impact with things like Uber and the bike share that you can get on? Because my problem, I think, with a lot of you, in a day, you may go three different places within the county. Well, you can't take tracks. That doesn't work, and you've got to get from point A to point B to point C and then wherever. Are those facilities or those other options increasing ridership? I don't know. I don't know how you measure that.
Great questions. Scott's probably the best one to respond to active transportation. We can do that now, or maybe prepare that for another.
It's a quick, easy answer. We don't have those numbers on how it affects, especially vehicles miles traveled. We can give you Green Bike's report on what their trip generation is, and then do a calculation of vehicle miles avoided or cold starts avoided because of those trips, but we don't really have a good way of interfacing those with how it affects this. And then, as I understand, UTA has the ability, in the same way of collecting like a wheelchair coming onto the bus and pushing a button of a bike boarding, that they began pushing more. So over time, we might have a better idea across the system of where bike on and off boardings happen, but that's another data set that doesn't exist just yet.
Eric, I guess.
Well, Kit's done a great job of describing how growth is occurring, and as we're looking at growth, basically our population is expected to double within our planning horizon. And so we've been challenged to look at more innovative ways, more technological advancements in dealing with congestion rather than building. And several years ago, we had a gentleman from Melbourne, Australia, come out and visit us, looking at DVIs and CFIs, and wanted to learn more about what we were doing with our transportation system. While he was here, he shared some of the concepts that they're going through. And one of the concepts that he brought up was this managed motorway systems. It's really a coordinated ramp metering system on the freeways, and it's using technology to get more lane capacity out of the existing system. So they looked at their system, very much like us, they identified freeways are a major asset, and they wanted to make sure that they got the most out of that investment. But those congestion freeways are not performing where we really need them the most. And so that was the question. That's what they knew. They really felt that they could get more out of the freeway systems than what they were doing. So after our visit with this gentleman from Melbourne, we commissioned a study with that group from Melbourne and PB here locally to look at our system. And we learned a lot of interesting things that they're experiencing there. This red line here is really equivalent to the way we're functioning here in the state of Utah, the green line is we're losing capacity because our freeway's breaking down during our peak travel windows. That red line is how Melbourne is operating, and ultimately they're gaining about a 25% increase in throughput capacity on the freeway system throughout that peak travel time. And then the Australian culture is very focused on safety. Since 1971, they've required airbags in their vehicles. They have a strong safety policy. If you're speeding 3 kilometers over the speed limit, it's a $300 ticket, automatically enforced. That's 1.5 miles over the posted speed limit.
There's ways to raise some money.
Yeah. So they're very focused on safety. And as they started implementing this coordinated ramp metering system or this managed waterway system, right here you can see their crashes that were existing prior to the implementation. After their implementation, they saw a 31% reduction in crashes. The interesting trend for us is there's a couple of years recently where they've experienced zero fatalities. That's our number one goal as an agency. And so we're pretty excited about what this does for a safety perspective as well. Not just getting more vehicles through the system, but making our system safer. Going to our system now. This is at southbound on I-15, just south of the I-80-SR-201 merge. And just right here, the red line is the traffic volume. And what happens is we see this spike in volume, and that spike in volume ends up choking the freeway. And so the volume really can't recover until the volume drops off enough. And that is equivalent to 1,800 vehicles. We carry about 2,000 vehicles in the freeway lane in a non-congested, kind of right before it goes to that breakdown point. So in essence, through technology, we have the potential of gaining just under a freeway lane capacity on our freeway system. This is a very detailed sketch of traffic. This is the volume here along this axis. This is the speed. What happens is the vehicles are coming along, traveling. They get to a point where you can't serve any more traffic on it. And this is our freeway system. And what happens is this blue line is we see the breakdown in, and we see our speeds go from 70 miles an hour down to about 40 miles an hour. And we operate in our peak hour kind of in that low speed congestion, and that's impacting the number of vehicles. You look here, you know, 9,000 versus about 11,000 vehicles, 1,800 vehicles, we're losing the capacity. We don't really recover until the volumes decrease. What our goal is to manage the freeway up at this high level, and that's using RAM meters that control the flow into the system at strategic intervals. They're looking at a much higher density of, or a more fine criteria of time. So they're looking at traffic volumes every 20 seconds. We're currently looking at traffic volumes about every 15 minutes in our system. And using the technology, they're able to keep that freeway just before it goes to failure. It's kind of, describe it similar to the sound barrier, where you have an airline pilot that's just kind of got that plane nipping at the sound barrier. That's what they're doing with vehicle capacity on the freeway. So in conclusion, the freeways are some of our highest roadway assets in the system, and we feel like with a system similar to this managed motorways being implemented, we can gain 15-20% additional throughput, almost equivalent to one additional lane on the freeway. Significant or shorter travel times, improved travel time reliability because they're not dealing with the breakdowns and the slowing, and then the significant crash or safety benefits, 30% reduction in crashes. So that's really what we have. We've studied it. We feel like it's a strong possibility for us in the future. We're currently trying to identify funding as we move forward.
Eric, is that something that's going to be done in just key locations first and then study the outcome of it, or are you going to go border to border? Or
We've been looking primarily at the Salt Lake County area and trying to identify the benefits of that. The interesting thing is to manage that Salt Lake County area, you've got to manage outside of the county. So for southbound, you've got to manage up towards Farmington. For northbound, you've got to go down into Utah County and manage. So certainly from a funding perspective, to get the full package, it would be difficult for us to build the entire system tomorrow. And so we would look to increment, build it, ultimately prove it. We've got some counterparts over in Denver that are building a test system in the next year or two, and so we're hoping to learn from their experiences as well. You know, it's a short 8-hour drive or 1-hour flight, so we can go over and visit with them. We've been exchanging a lot of information over the years.
It looks promising. I think one of the unforeseen consequences is you fix this area, then this area goes bad, and you got to fix it, and that goes bad, and I think it's going to be a moving target, so to speak.
And until we see it implemented everywhere. Yep. Yep.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
What's the YouTube reference?
We have a video that we've generated that shows rice in a beaker, kind of a funnel going through. And that's what the YouTube reference is.
Is that McDonald rice and traffic? So what happens when you don't let people on the freeway, they queue on the ramp? And what the demonstration shows is basically the funnel at the ramp, and they queue on it, but if you allow it to trickle through, you can get a lot more people to the bottom of the funnel. You can just let everyone go at one time. So we're trying, the demonstration tries to show you that although you're sitting on a ramp, you feel like you're not moving, overall your queue time is going to be short. You couldn't sit on the ramp for 5 minutes, 10 minutes before you get to the freeway. Well, the freeway, you don't stop. And it's kind of a difficult concept for someone to visualize, because if I'm on a ramp for 10 minutes, I'm not a heavy camper, right? But if I'm sitting in the middle of I-15 for 40 minutes, I'm less happy. So it's a good visualization to see. It really outlines what Terry's trying to accomplish with this. I think his estimate, his latest estimate is what, 150, 180?
Yeah, 150.
$150 million to implement this from basically the entire Salt Lake County.
That's for both directions.
Yeah, so it's not free, but it's definitely one of our top priorities.
Does that mean that our ramps have the capacity for that kind of staging?
That's why it's $150 million, because the ramps don't.
Not the technology.
Yeah. Allows that.
But if I may, the notion that we would add a full lane of capacity for the essentially the entire system for that amount of money,
yeah,
is absurdly inexpensive, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's just pocket change.
Yeah. So it's a lot of money. But if you were going to build another lane on the, what nobody is suggesting, but if you were going to do that, it would cost 10 times, 100 times as much? I mean,
I don't know about that, but
10 times.
We have a project right now that's funded from SR-201 southbound to 123rd with improvements at 72nd South.
Oh, good.
That adds one lane southbound. Uh-huh. That's 175 million.
There you go. Just for that segment.
Just for that one segment in that one direction.
Changes the lane in each direction.
One lane in each direction.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, that's the $150 million estimate right now. It's both directions.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I don't know if any of you remember when they started the traffic monitoring onto the ramp. For the first 2 days, everybody would stop and the light would change back to red and they were backing the ramps up 3 miles. We trained our people well.
I want to ask a question. You know, as we look at the growth along the Wasatch Front and the demand for Fed and State money, what are we doing as a organization to make certain that we're keeping in the pecking order of getting that money? Are we visiting our legislature? Are we talking to federal transportation people just to make certain we get that money? Because, you know, as we have projections along the Wasatch Front with growth, these projects that we got putting up there, if we continue with the same funding, they're just going to get further and further diluted. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking we need to be out there advocating for more money in order to really move the dial on some of these projects. Otherwise, you know, we're going to get lost in the midst of this massive population and greater transportation needs. So I just thought maybe sometime have a report of what we're doing in terms of trying to advocate for that, we truly need to do that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, to some extent, that's sort of a rhetorical question, right? Like, we have to be telling the story and making the case for the investments that we need to make. As we all know, you have to strike an appropriate balance between always having your hand out and being thankful for the investments that have been made. And also demonstrating that we're doing the best job we can to be as efficient as possible with limited public resources. Having said that, we are growing really fast, and it's really essential to make sure that policymakers have the information about what's going to happen in the future. So if we make investments, the most effective investments, here's what we expect the future of the region and the state will be, and if we don't, here's what we expect that will be. I think that we as an MPO, UDOT, UTA, we all kind of take the same approach, which is let's do the best job we can in providing credible information to policymakers and to your constituents, so that good decisions can be made. And part of that is coming up with the best plans possible and explaining the implications of different scenarios of investments and not. But it's a continual process, and to some extent it starts at the highest level with the Unified Transportation Plan, showing that from the whole state, we've got good, thoughtful plans in place for what investments need to be made, and then translating that down into what it means to the individual community or even the individual voter.
I appreciate that. I just, as we get the legislative session approaching, you know, there will be two items that will come up. It's education and water.
Yep.
And I think transportation is always going to be somewhat of a threat in terms of funding. So I agree, we have to have a proper balance between thank you and we need more. But right. We certainly, I'm hoping we're raising a voice that we do need to, because as municipal leaders, we're seeing, I mean, we have 250 miles of lane miles that have to manage with 33,000 people. Right. And it becomes a greater need each year to try to manage that. And there's going to be less and less money as population. You know, you can say, well, you're going to get more money because population, but not necessarily because you've got education, you've got water, you've got other issues that's going to demand that funding. So,
I just respond a little bit to that. I think from a statewide perspective and from a state system, we have a very sustainable system right now. The funding that we're getting both from the state and the federal government allows us to really address the demand at a statewide perspective. I think it's really the local jurisdictions right now that are most needed, and Prop 1 was the fix for that, or the attempt to fix it. I think our legislature is trying, and I think I don't want to speak for the commission, but I believe that we're pretty good. We're funded out to 2023 now. We have some big projects in there that are going to really address the congestion at a statewide perspective. But you're right on, when you get to that local communities are needed for sure. I think a constant discussion about Prop 1 and where it goes from here, I think that's where the conversation needs to be focused on. At least for the next little while. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, we got one item of other business. Scott, we'll give you about 2 minutes.
That's generous. That's
1 minute.
Seconds. So thank you for your time today. Scott Hess, Active Transportation Planner for Wasatch Front Regional Council. Just wanted to make you aware of and tout the fact that we were awarded $20 million for an Active Transportation style TIGER grant. And if you're not familiar or as familiar with me as me, what TIGER stands for is Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery. The funding program from federal government comes down. We have received other TIGER grants in the area. Streetcar Line in Salt Lake City was funded through TIGER. This one in particular is based around first last mile solutions for transit for the fixed guide rail. It's 2 MPOs, 6 counties, 26 cities, UDOT, UTA, and over 300 projects individually that were funded at a total project cost of $87 million. So the request we made was $28 million. The funding that we received is $20 million. We have an $8 million gap there to fill that we're going to attempt to keep the list whole. But this is all preview. We just received the award about 3 weeks ago. So you'll find out more as we know more. But just taking an opportunity to get up in front of each of the committees and make everybody aware of this phenomenal win for active transportation in our area for multimodal transportation and the improvements that we'll see coming up over the next 5 years. That, any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other business?
I have a very quick personnel item.
Okay.
So all of you, I think, may have met Andrea Pearson. Andrea is relatively new to WFRC, and she is helping us in staffing this committee with the administrative responsibilities. So you have already been, and you will continue to receive emails from her and information from her. If you need anything with regard to this committee, Andrea can help you. So, Andrea, welcome again.
Thank you.
If you need money, no. You got to go to Scott. He's the one with $20 million.
All right. Anything else?
Was there a turn?
Is there a second? All in favor?
Any opposed? Sorry. The next meeting?
Oh, next meeting is November 10th. That's a change from the 17th. So November 10th is the next meeting. And we'll send out a couple of points.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.